We present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Thank you. Hello and welcome once again to the news quiz. We start with a court report from the Bristol Evening Post, read by Brian Perkins.
Miss Tina Rawlings was yesterday found guilty of being in control of a dog which was dangerously out of control.
Thank you, Sydney Hughes of Bristol, for sending us that. Now let's meet the teams. We do welcome first, on my right, Richard Ingrams, and from the Daily Telegraph, Bill Deeds. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran and the World at One's Nick Clark. Before we start round one, here's just one of the categories advertised in the Yellow Pages.
Boring. See civil engineers.
Thank you, R. Watson of Perthshire, for that one. Richard, your question. Where did one go on a diplomatic mission improbable?
It is a reference to the royal person, I think. This is rather amazing, isn't it? To get one right so quickly. But I think it refers to Her Majesty's visit to Berlin.
That's right.
To visit her distant relations. Bill says there was a sequel. What was the sequel?
Well, I think we don't dwell on it.
No.
I think I did share that misbehaving people threw oranges, threw eggs at the Queen.
Good heavens. Obviously got a surplus of food over there. This does refer to the Queen's diplomatically sensitive state visit to Germany, or the great-great-grandfather land, as one calls it, which got off to a tricky start when the straight-talking Duke of Edinburgh mentioned the ERM. Luckily, Her Majesty managed to avoid further embarrassment by quickly steering the conversation round to the Allied bombing of Dresden. The highlight of the visit was the meeting between the two crown heads of Europe, the Queen and His Majesty the President of the Bundesbank, who was surprised to discover that she doesn't carry money, only sterling. Bill, where did minus 31 take away 10 equal plus 13?
Can only be the Chancellor of the Exchequer we're talking about.
Well, it's one sitting not too far from the Chancellor of the Exchequer.
I thought I might be warm there. I have a feeling that Mr. Heseltine came somewhere into this equation.
Exactly.
And, we won't say he's in the doghouse, but he's in certain difficulties, which arises from the fact that, without consulting anyone, he closed down a great number of coal mines. And for reasons which I still find difficult to understand, the British public rose in their wrath and shocked him one. And his future is generally thought to be under a cloud. And so, for the time being, I think it is.
That's very succinct. It's the continuing saga of Michael Heseltine and the acrimonious breakup of one of Britain's oldest and most inefficient national institutions, the Conservative Party. President Michael eventually won over a majority of 13 despite some backbench Tory rancour, or as he put it, resentment. The day finally belonged to Heseltine, as with a cry of, me Tarzan, you turn, he announced... announced the biggest climb down scene since Edmund Hillary sent Tenzing back to fetch a camera.
Just Nick, struck me that what? If he pronounced what you just said, backbench Tory rancor.
I was hoping we could bypass that aspect of it. Nick, your question now. Who blocked a job for the Boyle?
Oh, dear. Poor Mr. Kinnock. He hasn't got a mountain of coal on his doorstep, but he hasn't got a job in the EC either. He wanted to get on the gravy train to Brussels, where he was going to be a very important EC commissioner.
That's right.
And for some reason, they decided that it wouldn't be a good idea to allow him to operate his Welsh charm on all those Europeans. And they left him at home. And he's now got to find other sorts of work. You haven't invited him on this programme, have you? No.
No. Anyway, it's this week's Prime Minister who has blocked Neil Kinnock's appointment to the European Commission, so allowing for the traditional... I don't mind waiting. As I say, it's this week's Prime Minister who has blocked Neil Kinnock's appointment to the European Commission, so allowing for the traditional weekend U-turn, the ex-Labour leader should be in his Brussels office by Monday. The decision followed fierce cabinet opposition to giving the key post to a man they considered to be completely lacking in credibility, a view endorsed by Mr. Major, the Chelsea supporting son of a trapeze artist. Alan, will you have a listen to this? A number called Johnny Come Home by a group called the Fine Young Cannibals. It has nothing to do with the question. Whose state of mind is a sign of the times?
Oh, that's a bit unfair. You'll probably give me the Hussey and Chaplin question as well. We need a sacrifice at the moment. This is my newspaper. This is my other job. Oh. This was a piece that suggested that John Major was round the twist because he fiddles with his clothing and doesn't eat well and looks a bit grey. Always looked a bit grey. And Norman Fowler got very upset and said this is quite outrageous that a newspaper that the Tories had been relying on to lie for them was lying in a way that was of no use to them.
You might as well form up in the queue now behind Neil Kinnock, I think.
Yeah. No, I thought it was jolly sad. They also said that Norma was very lonely and spent all her time with the bodyguards. sounded like a wonderful 1950s group, didn't it? Norma and the bodyguards. These you have loved. But there we are. It's a slur.
He sent out for fish and chips.
Yes.
Packed at the banquets, but sent out for fish and chips. That's the gravest charge of all.
Probably wrapped in the Times, I should think, Bill, wouldn't you?
Well, I'm just going to say nothing. I'm just telling you the scores at the end of the first round, which are back to a good old tradition of the news quiz for all. Even Steve. We start round two, anyway, with an item from the Worcester Evening News.
Police have referred Madonna's controversial new book, Sex, to the Crown Prosecution Service following a complaint about the book, which features glossy, explicit photographs of Madonna by Tory MP Nicholas Winterton.
Thank you, Anne Lewis of Malvern, for sending us that. Richard, who spoke his piece unto whom?
Is it to do with religious people?
No. It's,
or the BBC, the both?
It's quasi-religious people.
But there are two very peculiar attacks this week by figures of the establishment. One was the former Archbishop of Canterbury, who made this amazing attack on his one-time envoy, Terry Waite, and said he never liked the fellow, should have shaved off his beard, and he never had him as an envoy, and it was his own bloody fault that he'd been captured. And that was one.
The other one
was very similar.
The other one was this BBC Johnny.
Sums him up awfully well, I think.
Now, I was thinking of him when you had this thing about the dog being out of control at the beginning. because his dog was out of control in the shape of Mr. Checkland, who made an amazing ageist attack on his colleague, Sir Marmalade. said he was far too old for the job.
That's right.
At whatever he is.
It was the speech by the outgoing Director General, too outgoing for some. At a Royal TV symposium, Sir Michael attacked his chairman, Marmaduke Cussy, and the board of directors for being so old and out of touch that they think FM means fuzzy monsters. The chairman has retorted that the only person who can actually get rid of him is Her Majesty the Queen. So if anyone's still getting this on long wave in Germany... Bill, your turn for a question again. What's changing up at the palace?
What changes? No, it's not the guard.
Yes.
The guard has changed.
The guards are changing, yes.
Is Mr. Heseltine cutting them down?
I have an idea that the depletion of our forces, which we all regret, is leading to certain changes in what guards Buckingham Palace. And that's a very serious matter.
Yes.
A.A. Milne would have had a word to say about that. You can only really be met by a frightfully good poem, which has not yet been composed. I think the answer lies in a poem, and I haven't time to write it now.
It's all about the Buckingham Palace Guard, cutbacks with the boys of the Life Guards, the Greys and the Blues and Royals merging to form a new slim-look, royal-mounted, blue-grey household life boys. Small numbers mean guardsmen lining state processions will have to stand further apart, threatening all sense of security as they can't hold hands anymore. Sadly, the Queen's birthday parades will have to be cut down to just one a year. These cuts follow an embarrassing security lapse when a man was found in Princess Margaret's bedroom and a whole platoon of heavily armed guards failed to prevent him getting out. Now, Nick, here's a piece of music for you.
I don't have to tell you what that was called.
Well, too many depths in that lyric. And the question is, what won't be toasted as the cream of Britain after 1995?
Well, I think it's the first time on this programme that a piece of music has ever given me the faintest clue to... And in this case, it's the outrageous suggestion that sherry culled from grapes in Doncaster or Clitheroe fails to make sherry to match that in Jerez. And the Spaniards think that there's some difference between them, and apparently we're now going to kowtow to this dreadful regime, and we're not going to be able to call it British sherry any longer.
Quite right. So that's another ludicrous piece of Eurodarp legislation, this time to outlaw British sherry in 1995, simply for the pathetic excuse that British sherry isn't British, and it isn't sherry either. Follows objections from Spain, who regard sherry as part of their national heritage. Soon we won't be allowed bullfighting or gastroenteritis. Anyway, Alan, your question again. Who once drummed up support by preventing a Mersey beating?
This is something to do with Ringo Starr, is it?
Yes. Liverpool, years ago, young man on a Rhodes scholarship was at Oxford.
Oh, Kevin Clinton, who used to play for Birkenhead.
Presumably Bush has said that he used to go and listen to the Beatles, therefore he's not fit to run a democracy. Communist. Listen to Ringo in the cavern. I missed that story. I won't accept any points for it. Unless you're feeling extremely generous.
It is about President Bill Clinton. It's as well to be prepared. Duke Hussey is bound to give this show a Christmas repeat. The story that could clinch the presidency is that back in the 60s, someone looking very like Clinton saved someone looking very much like Ringo Starr from being beaten up in a Liverpool pub. Oddly enough, this is seen as a vote winner. Apparently Ringo, who put on a Heineken bar towel on his head and was mistaken for Yasser Arafat. In a last-ditch attempt to save the Bush campaign, Dan Quayle has now leapt onto the bandwagon with a claim it was he who saved Buddy Holly from a potential car crash. By putting him on an aeroplane. And the scores are still tied at 8-8. We start round three with a cutting from The Times.
Charles Kinsella, who sued Dorset County Council for £10,000 compensation for breaking his ankle after allegedly tripping on a broken curbstone, was revealed in court yesterday to be a peeping Tom who received his injuries when he fell from a ladder while staring through a neighbour's window.
Well, thank you, Ian Burgess of Manchester, for sending that one in. Richard, your time for a question again. How might you now move into a popular aria?
I was thinking of that very good running mate of Ross Perot, who's another oldie, who was being questioned by someone like yourself. And he said, would you repeat the question, because I haven't got my hearing aid switched on.
Richard, switch on, here it comes. How might you now move into a popular aria?
Well, indeed, yes. Is it to do with opera?
Yes.
Is it to do with that very fat Italian?
It is.
It is. That's as far as I get to go.
Absolutely useless. Alan Corran.
Well, someone paid an enormous amount of money to have this fat Italian that Richard mentioned, and what they got was a tape instead.
They got a what?
They got a tape.
Oh, I thought you said an ape.
Goodness me.
How much would you pay to have Ross Perot? I think he would provide...
Not a lot.
A bit cheaper.
Anyway, the answer to the question is karaoke opera, the new system which allows even the most tuneless of crooners to become Pavarotti, thanks to the latest electronic gadgetry, an inflatable dinner jacket. The 21-track recording features especially shortened versions of arias from great works like Madame Caterpillar and Mozart's Don. Bill, have a listen to this.
Well, it's not Madonna, that's for sure.
That's true. It's the Maple
Leaf. I related to the sort of thing that I danced with when I was much, much younger. And I may have heard it recently. I may have heard it in a new movie that's arrived from Australia.
Yes, well, it doesn't matter if you have or not, because... it is the musical Clue, and that was the Maple Leaf Rag... And the question is, whose flagging anger was inversely proportional?
Oh, that's a different question altogether.
It is. It is. It is a different question.
I was listening to the music.
It's a great mistake.
I was expecting to comment on it. I've got a negative answer, right? I've got a positive. I positively did dance to that sort of music.
Well, we'll give you points for that.
I'm not prepared to take it any further.
It's a baseball World Series. And a Canadian team went to Atlanta. One lot was called the Braves, but I can't remember which. All that transpired was that they flew the Canadian flag upside down.
That's right.
Whereupon the Canadians thrashed the local American team, which I'm very pleased about.
Absolutely true. So the outbreak of hostilities between Canada and their American neighbours after the US Marines paraded the Canadian flag upside down at a baseball match. Oddly enough, no one complained when they did it with a Japanese flag. Nick, your question. Who hopes to clean up their slow image this fall?
It's a story which conjures up an absolutely wondrous vision of the announcer at Waterloo Station saying, "I'm sorry to report that the 8:57 from Penge has been delayed by flooding caused by the water cannon used to clear the leaves from the line."
In a giant technical leap forward, British Rail have made the startling discovery that leaves on the line are caused by trees shedding them in autumn. It's well to have experts on the job. VR's new anti-leaf strategy involves a water cannon, an Austrian snake grinder, some sticky paste impregnated with metal spheres, and a Swedish scrubber. Apparently they got that idea from a night out with Frank Boff. Now, why did being hounded out leave us feeling poles apart?
It's not the owl, is it?
No.
Oh, it must be the owl. And
I thought
the owl comes
the owl.
In a moment.
Oh,
the owl comes in a moment.
No, I'm busy.
Don't anticipate the owl.
Well, we have. We've blown our owl.
This is our owl card.
This is poles. Is real poles.
Real poles.
North
real
and south poles or south poles.
South poles? South pole.
And there are dogs.
Dogs, yes. And they're called...
Huskies.
That's right. Yes. These huskies at the South Pole.
Give us the question again. Because there were so many husky questions at the South Pole this week.
Of course.
I don't know which one it is.
Marmaduke Husky.
I yield my points to Richard. No,
this is the international row which has blown up in Antarctica because Britain refuses to pull out a team of husky dogs. The British Antarctic Survey claims the huskies have only known life in the frozen waste, and therefore bringing them back to this country would be a traumatic experience. Poor things, just imagine arriving in a land full of cats, sticks and lampposts. The huskies have been accused of growling at penguins, which is hardly a heinous crime. They were probably frustrated at not being able to get the wrappers off in the cold. Well, the scores have changed. Richard and Bill have 10, but Alan and Nick have slipped into the lead with 12. Before we start the final round, here's a story from the London Evening Standard.
Stacey Hancock, aged 11, who borrowed a stone tortoise from her grandmother's garden, named it Freddy, put it in a box filled with straw, and wrote a sign warning, "Do not disturb," nearly asleep, won first prize in a school pet show today, beating 35 live entries.
Wonderful story. And thank you, Gloria Cronk of London, for sending us that. Richard, here at last is a piece of music for you. Called World in Union, and the question is, who decided to give freedom a try?
Well, I was going to repeat Bill's dictum and say that wasn't Madonna either. I thought it was Mrs. Thatcher to begin with. Has she gone in for singing? Doing some very odd things nowadays.
Kiri Tikanova.
Oh, Kiri, yes.
And this is not about her at all, it's about sport. It's a sporting question.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's no use giving a sporting question.
Well, I'll pass it across to Nick. No good answer.
The police are looking for a man who was serving 3¾ years, and the description they've given is wearing a stripy shirt and muddy knees. So he was playing for Little Hay Long-Term Offenders Institution.
Isn't that David Mellor? Then,
No, David Mellor doesn't come into it this week.
Yeah, he's suffered enough.
So have we. Absolutely right, Nick, you get your points. It's Mitchell Douglas who went on the run after playing an away game for Little Hay Prison Rugby Club. A police spokesman said, under no circumstances should the public attempt to tackle this man. Bill, your question. Where might you pick up a painting?
A painting?
A painting. It could be in the south of France.
No.
He's absolutely outside my range of knowledge.
It could be in a cave in the south of France.
The cave painting featuring penguins?
Were they old animals sitting at the bottom of a deep pit through which deep-sea divers found traces of life X thousands of years ago?
Yes, certainly.
And it suggested that people had nothing better to do than to draw pictures in deep wells immersed in water, which I thought very odd indeed.
It's the divers in the south of France who have discovered prehistoric cave paintings depicting Mediterranean penguins. Well, that or primitive cave nuns. French ornithologists believe the murals are an elaborate hoax, particularly the one entitled Our Club 1830 BC Holiday. Nick, who was a very pretty, tasty boy, then.
Oh, I'm the lucky one, aren't I?
Yeah.
I'm the lucky one. It's the flyaway owl. He was a tame owl, and he was found by a bird fancier. You can't get much luckier than that, can you? And he was put in a cage for the night while they searched for his owner. And inside the cage as well were all the owner's favourite budgies. When I say the owl fancied the budgies, you can take that any which way, but they weren't the same afterwards.
Tell them how they found out.
Oh, I can't. That's too painful.
The owl was called
Obi. Obe.
And the budgerigar was called Louis, which is wonderful, because the owl ate it. An RSPCA inspector examined the regurgitated food of the owl because owls regurgitate their food. And they found a little beak in it. It was Louis' beak, identified by his beak.
I couldn't read that far. I was too upset by them.
Heartbreaking.
Sad. Meanwhile, O's been acting very strangely since her meal. She keeps flying up to the tower of the local church and ringing the bell with her head. Alan, where were spots knocked off the opposition?
Oh, God. Another one. I've been thinking about nothing all week except this owl. I think grief has driven everything else from my memory. Spots knocked off the opposite. Is it a leopard question?
No, it's a domino question.
It's a domino question. It's the Rat and Cockle. There is a pub called the Rat and Cockle where the world champion domino team... God knows what that looks like. How many people are there in a domino team?
The six on
anyway,
and six on
there
the
was
other.
A Barney. Oh, is it? Oh, yes. It's a domino hooligan story.
That's right.
It's the end of civilization. Not even as I know it, because I don't know anything about dominoes, but it's
Anyway, the visiting fans threw beer on the domino players, and before you knew it, they were tearing the rat and cockle apart.
That's right. It's the organisers of the British Domino Championship who've had to employ bouncers for the finals following violence on the crib boards during qualifying round. The Bridlington Domino Riots caused... That's a great ring to it, doesn't it? The Bridlington Domino Riots caused consternation for the sports ruling body, coming so soon after the Melton Mowbray shove Hackney board rumpus. After 15 hours of intense competition and intense drinking, tempers frayed when one domino player pushed another over, and in seconds they were all on the floor, lying end to end, with those on doubles lying sideways. And before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the team have brought along. Richard, have you a cutting for us?
Another apology. It says, from a computing magazine, it says, due to a production error, the pictures of Anderson consulting managing partner Vernon Ellis and a British Rail train were transposed in... were transposed in last week's issue. Our apologies to Vernon Ellis in particular.
Bill, what have you brought for us?
The Reigate firefighters had to extinguish a blazing toilet roll which had caught alight in a car park's automatic toilet behind Marks and Spencer in Reigate High Street at 11:12 p.m. on Wednesday. Foul play is not suspected.
Nick.
A sad note in the Christ College Cambridge magazine just out. David John Mellor, B.A., 1970, was given in the 8th annual Highland Park Spectator Parliamentarians of the Year Award the award of Member to Watch.
Thank you, Nick. Alan?
Well, I have one from the Macclesfield Express Advertiser, ooh. Barry. The arrest of Roberts for the theft of the three overcoats was all thanks to sharp-eyed cashier Wendy Sissons. She noticed that when Roberts dropped the credit card he was using to pay for a pair of gloves he legitimately purchased, he was unable to bend down and pick it up. The three overcoat joke is rather visual.
And let me give you the scores at the end of the competition. Richard and Bill have scored 12. But Alan and Nick are this week's winners with 17. Well played. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Glasgow Herald, sent in by Tom Windsor.
On a recent visit to the Young Offenders Institution, the young lady who gives Bible lessons returned to her car to find she'd locked her keys inside. However, the warden assured her that there were plenty of people around who could get into her car. He proceeded to ask which inmates were in for doing cars. A youth volunteered and was taken out to the car. He obliged by launching a brick through the windscreen.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingrams, Alan Corran, Bill Deeds and Nick Clark. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser Steele. The producer was Colin Swash.